What's happening?
Oh my gosh, you're ascending!
I am? I am!
It must have been when you saved me, when you were willing to sacrifice yourself for me!
I pretended to be finding myself for so long, I guess I actually did! Okay, wow. Oh, that actually burns. Is this supposed to be happening?
Oh, it burns! Okay, you're smoking?
It burns! Ah, help! Oh, I don't want to ascend! No! Ah!
Drop and roll! Drop back into the physical and roll! Drop back into the physical and roll!
I'm so beating!
Transfer complete.
Hello, and welcome to Subspace Transmissions, the podcast where two Trek fans step into the arena and tackle the best, worst, weirdest, wildest, and everything in between that Star Trek has to offer. I'm Cam Smith, and joining me on the bridge,
this is Tyler Orton reciting some vocal jazz. Skiddly bop bop boop 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 bop.
No, you're supposed to keep going. You got to fill an hour here.
No, Cam, it's the notes that you don't scat.
Okay, and we're here this week to take on episode 4 of Star Trek Lower Decks, titled Moist Vessel.
Yeah, Cam, I think that we've always been honest with each other and honest with our listeners on the show here. So be honest with me right now. If somebody had to clean out the holodeck, your own personal biofilters, how long would that take them?
I don't know that there's a good way to answer that.
Oh, well, I kind of put that as kind of an unfair question. But, Cam, I did like that gag. I'll just say that much. Yeah, here. You know how last week I was kind of complaining that maybe the show was still trying to find its right comedic voice, and like I thought it seemed a little soft in what they thought edginess was, like, hey, look, our characters get drunk. And I was just like, I don't know, I want them to push a little further. I like things like how the holodeck, if we kind of think about it, it is kind of gross. They've made some subtle nods to that over the years in Star Trek, most notably I think in The Perfect Mate, where Riker escorts Famke Janssen to her quarters. She is very charming, and then he runs out and hits his comm badge and says, I'll be on holodeck 3 if you need me, Bridge. Like, those kinds of things, you know?
Plus, there was all those times where Quark would name off, like, his erotica programs that he had for his holosuites. So it's kind of a running joke on Star Trek that holosuites / holodecks are used for adult activities.
Is Captain Freeman really that naive that she doesn't understand that?
Yeah, it seems kind of weird too, right? Like, this isn't the early days of the holodeck. This isn't like the practical Joker from the original animated series or something.
Sure, where
it's like the proto holodeck or something. Like, this is countless years into the existence of a holodeck, and she's just learning this now?
The one thing that, and if I could just like pick apart a joke, which that's always kind of a dumb endeavor to get on to, so I do apologize, but just briefly, I like the implication that we're getting from the joke as we see, you know, Mariner having to, like, she just, like, just is totally, you know, gagging as she's pulling the biofilters out. But then you have to go onto the bridge, and then Ransom, he spells it out right there. Like, it's even bleeped out, and they're just kind of beating the audience over the head with it. I don't know, let the audience use their imaginations. That's kind of what I'm into. But what did you think of that moment with Ransom kind of explaining it to Freeman?
Was that there for casual viewers who don't know exactly what the holodeck is? Like, and wouldn't know what that means? Like, cleaning the biofilters, like, wouldn't even pick up what that even means.
I wonder if it's that, or I wonder if they just generally think it's funny where it's like, I'm making her clean out bleep out of the bleep filters. Like,
right.
I honestly, I don't mind. People were complaining online about bleeping it. They're like, what's the point? You know, you can drop F-bombs on Picard and Discovery. Why bleep it on Lower Decks? I think in comedy, like, bleeps are pretty funny. It's because you have to use your imagination, and that makes it even funnier. So, like I said, I don't want to critique a joke too much, but the joke kind of works for me on one level when we get the first sight gag with Mariner. And they still go with it further on, but I wish they could have just kind of left it there and left it to our imagination. What do you think about the bleeps, though? What's your take on this?
I agree with you. They're funnier. I think bleeps are infinitely funnier in especially like animation, because I think of times where they've used bleeps on The Simpsons or probably Family Guy, just shows like that. I tend to find that funnier.
Yeah, for sure. But some overall, so it's interesting. I was really into this episode for the first two acts. My critique again is going to be like, we get that last act and it's a very, very busy sort of action sequence, yet another kind of invasion of the ship, which we've seen 3 out of 4 episodes. And that's where the show kind of lost me, but I still think overall, I think this is my favorite episode of the series at this point.
This was the best character episode. It actually felt like the first one that could, I can't say it settled down because this was a very fast-paced episode, but it at least gave us a little bit more depth with its characters than we've gotten so far, which I did appreciate.
Those first two acts, though, that is kind of more of that hangout, sort of like you're living with the characters, and that's what I kind of appreciated most here. We're just falling around with Mariner as she has to do some of the crappiest gigs imaginable, but it's not really punishment to her that much, although maybe the biofilters are, but it's really, and this is kind of the character stuff that you're talking about, when she is promoted and then she has to endure horrible things like deciding on what kind of chairs are going to populate the meeting room or having to play the executive poker game, like that sort of stuff. Those are the kinds of moments that I dig far more than having, you know, kind of the aliens from Annihilation take over the ship and turn everything into plants.
Also, just having to go to the, like, again, staff talent show or whatever that was.
Oh, that was amazing. Cam, the whole idea of having to sit through a one-man show called the United Federation of Characters, and it's just like, that would be brutal. That would be brutal.
I kept thinking, though, this episode was like 24 minutes about there. And I think back, you know, a lot of the great Simpsons episodes, you know, the season 4, season 5 kind of episodes, they were less, like the running time was a little bit shorter than this. And yet, why does this show feel so much like busier and like going 100 miles an hour versus like a season 4 Simpsons episode?
I think it's kind of twofold. Like generally with the Simpsons, they didn't have that many B stories or C stories. That it's generally like you might start with a B story that actually turns into the A story. You remember that episode where Homer gets a trampoline and you spend the first 5 minutes of the episode focused on this trampoline, and then eventually Homer has to ditch it, and then the A story turns into Marge and Homer trying to figure out kind of like why their marriage is kind of boring right now. You know, that's kind of what Simpsons usually did. You're following kind of like linear events. Whereas this, we had like the Mariner story going on. We had the USS Illinois kind of mummified cryo chambers going on. We had Mariner getting promoted going on. We had Boimler being jealous. Did I mention Tendi and the Ascension storyline? Like that's just 5 things right there.
Yeah, and a lot of it felt, again, like a little too fast-paced. Like I tend to find when a show is just rocketing through, you know, 24 minutes or whatever, it doesn't stick in my brain that well when it's over.
But you know, I'm going to go back to what you're talking about, though. It's the fast-paced, like climactic action sequences that just kind of glaze right over me. Like that, yeah. I kind of get bored there. Cam, I'm remembering moments like you said, like the talent show. I loved it when Captain Freeman was just like, you have to come to Commander Ransom's birthday. He's going to be playing acoustic guitar for hours, and they're all songs that he wrote about his month in Barcelona. Like, that's the kind of stuff that's going to stick in my head way, way more than watching flowers spread out nonstop as they, you know, try to bash sharp rocks through the corridors.
Yeah, like, I would have liked even more of just, like, the crappy assignment stuff. Like, I felt like, again, all that was kind of run through very quickly. Like, a lot of this felt like it was done almost too quickly. When we had the talent show and we had the United Federation of Characters, I would have liked to have seen a little bit of that because I think it probably would have been funny.
Well, let me throw this back at you, though. It left you wanting more, right?
Yeah, which is good, I guess, in comedy.
Yeah, I think that's what they should be doing, is leaving you wanting more as opposed to just, like, beating it into the ground. And that's kind of my complaint sometimes, is if they just kind of, like, beat something into the ground. I'm just like, no, I get it. Like, let me rewatch that scene just because I like the idea. And maybe it's one of those things where it's like, okay, the idea is great. We've got the pitch. How great is the execution going to be? Because I think whatever I have in my head about how excruciating the United Federation of Characters would be, it might just get tedious if we have to watch, you know, like a full 60 seconds of it.
Possibly. I mean, give me like 15 seconds. It doesn't have to be 60.
No, but I think, like I said, just like using your imagination, I think that's just kind of a stronger tool to rely on, because I just pointed to the fact like, okay, it's an animated series. There's no real budget that they have to worry about. The stuff that we didn't like was the stuff where they're just, you know, it's the action sequence. It's where like you're just like spending all this time just because they can do it. You know, like that's the stuff that's not really like sticking in our minds so much.
Yeah, no, that is very true. Yeah. And so, I mean, when you just like close with these action sequences too, it's something I find, this isn't reserved for Lower Decks. This is something I generally have a complaint about. Maybe it's very personal for me, but I tend to get a little frustrated with extended action sequences in comedies because I'm just not that invested in the danger or the tension of the sequence because it's constantly undercut by the characters being comedic.
That I know for a fact that's a long-standing issue you've had, so I have to disagree with you. I think you can still be very invested in some of these sequences if done right, if it's a comedy. It just depends on what your, you know, suspension of disbelief might be, or just what your particular, you know, ceiling is for these kinds of situations. I think this is something particular to you more than kind of a universal thing, though. Would you agree?
Oh, yeah, that's why I said it was more of a personal thing for me, in that, like,
yeah,
that tends to drive me nuts, where I'm expected to sit through an extended action sequence and, like, care.
I go back to the Scott Pilgrim example. That's the movie that I love. You're pretty meh on it, because I remember talking to you about this, and you're just like, I don't know, it's like comedic action sequences. I'm not invested. I watch those sequences. They're some of the best directed action that I've seen in cinema in a long time. So that's why I'm kind of like, I marvel at what they're able to do, even within kind of the comedic elements of that universe that they built there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, fair enough.
Yeah. So I'm also getting a little bit better on like what I feel is working and what's not working on the show. Like I said, like the more cutting sort of jokes, like the holodeck biofilter, that's the stuff that works for me.
Yeah.
When we have like Rutherford, who unfortunately really had nothing to do in this episode.
Just like last week's episode, yeah.
Yeah, I think he and Tendi were a little bit more paired off though, right?
They were.
Was that the week before?
Week before. They got barely anything to do. They showed up more so in the first act of the last episode, but that was about it.
Yeah, yeah. But in this situation, we have Rutherford, and Tendi leaves the bar and says, you can have my lunch. He's like, I'm not hungry. And then he grabs a pudding cup and he screams, pudding. And like, I'm just like, am I supposed to laugh at that? Like, what is funny about that? I think in their heads, oh, it's a character moment. But in my head, I'm like, hey, if Tyler could write that, I don't know how funny it really is. If an adult like me can come up with a gag like that, I think if you're getting paid, you should come up with something a little bit better.
It's also one of those really lazy comedy tropes in especially animated shows where it's just like, have the character say something very random. Yes, like very random. Yeah. Like
Family Guy manatee joke.
Yeah, exactly. Where, I mean, pudding is not the best line. I would have come up with something else. Like, it was kind of like, okay, I guess.
Yeah, maybe if a Gormagander went by the ship and he yelled, space whale, or like, that might have been okay. But I the other thing that kind of, it threw me out of it, though. Like, I love the moment where the bridge calls down to Boimler. He's all upset because of Mariner's promotion. And I like that they're addressing these kinds of, you know, things within the universe where, like, he starts speaking to himself, not realizing that his comm badge is still transmitting.
Yeah.
And they're like, wait, what are you saying? And he's like, they'll get what they deserve. And he's like, no, wait, I'm on the holodeck. That's Moriarty. Okay. The Moriarty thing, like, that was just, that was too random for me, though. Like, it was just, it's another one of those, like, references that I'm just like, I think they're just doing it for the fan service-y reasons, but the joke all building up to that, I was totally in. I totally love the concept, but like, I don't know. Sometimes they throw me off. They take me out of the universe by being too self-referential to the Star Trek franchise as a whole sometimes.
Right. And I mean, I guess I'm a little forgiving of a moment like that because the joke ultimately works. And then the Moriarty is just kind of like the cherry on the icing. It's kind of
sure.
like,
okay.
you know, the joke works. Here's a little reference to kind of, you know, complete, put a bow on it basically, and then end the moment. So like, I can kind of get behind it because what, you know, what Boimler is doing in that moment is actually funny. If it wasn't funny and it just relied on him saying, "It's Moriarty, guys," I'd be like, "Oh, that was dead. Like, that didn't work at all."
Yeah. I really like Boimler in this one. I think this might have been my favorite Boimler episode throughout because, like, he was more in the background. He was doing his frantic, you know, uptight sort of act, and it wasn't a full force like we got it last week with buffer time. Just his reaction when he sees that where he's cleaning inside of the meeting room and he sees that Mariner has been promoted, and just his reaction there, like from the actor to the animation, like I just love those character moments. And like Boimler is on fire as far as I'm concerned in this one.
Anytime you can put a character in the background and have something funny coming out of them, that's a great thing to do. I think like that's something The Simpsons mastered very early on. And I mean, honestly, rip off the best guys.
Yes, yes.
I thought it was interesting, though, that Boimler said Hachi Machi at one point. I was like, is that a nod to The Critic?
Oh, I didn't pick up on that.
Yeah, I was like, wow, okay. I can't think of that term really being used outside of The Critic.
It's been a while since I've seen The Critic other than that episode, that crossover episode on The Simpsons.
Sure, yeah. I was like, that's an odd reference there. I wonder if it was intentional.
Yeah, perhaps. Yeah. The other crappy job that I loved, turbo lift lubing. Cam, could we sell turbo lift lube at a vendor's table in Las Vegas? Is that something that we could market?
Is this what our lives have come to?
I need to make a few extra bucks. It's, you know, tough times right now with the economy, man.
Now, are we doing this while the convention's postponed?
For sure.
We just set up a table at the Rio.
Well, it's the I remember every year it's like the Latino Accountant League sets up immediately after the Star Trek convention. And it's the most depressing thing ever as you're pulling down all of the Star Trek gear and you're just putting up signs for like accountants everywhere. And it's just kind of like, oh. Yeah, that's kind of depressing. So that's where we should sell our turbo lift lube is at the to all the Latino accountants setting up at the Rio this time next year.
To be fair, if there's any hotel that needs turbo lift lube, it's the Rio with those elevators.
There's been some frightening years where they've literally only had like two elevators in service for about 10,000 people, which is like the lines literally stretch beyond the casino. It's just crazy.
Yeah, like there was a year where they had to just take us up the emergency exits because they were like, you're not going to be able to get on an elevator.
Oh, man. Cam, a Tendi story here with the whole Ascension thing. I think it was great for Tendi's character. And we find out that she's much more fleshed out. She's klutzy. She's very earnest. She wants to be liked. I liked all the stuff that we learned about Tendi. But the Ascension storyline, I didn't really understand it at all, just from a mechanical perspective. You know, with like, she started to mix and match spiritual beliefs so that O'Connor could reach Ascension. And wait, is this like saying that there's some sort of afterlife in Star Trek where we already watched Mortal Coil and with Neelix and he found out that there is no afterlife? Like, I don't know what the message is of that particular storyline.
I mean, yeah, they refer to Q and the Traveler early on. So I'm like, okay, like I can kind of get behind this. Like I understand what they mean because you have, of course, Decker and Ilya joining at the end of the motion picture. Like that is a Star Trek thing. These people that transcend their mortal forms and, you know, spread themselves across the galaxy or whatever. But I mean, it seemed weird the way they were setting it up here with all these like religious totems and things like that. I was like, okay, like I don't know that this really lines up with what I've seen in Star Trek in the past where like a character would be studying various religions and making like sand I don't know, like paintings or whatever they are, sand portraits or whatever, and ascending through that. I don't really get it.
Well, it did give us a good gag when we had Tendi go up to the replicator and say, colorful sand, room temperature. I just like, I like that. Like that made me get, that got a chuckle out of me.
Here's the question. Was the O'Connor character funny enough in like, in basically an execution?
No, because like the whole twist kind of came out of nowhere. Like it wasn't set up with anything that we knew about the character leading up to that. Yeah. So it I'm not quite sure it even felt earned, and I'm not quite sure he made me laugh. Do you know who played him, Cam?
I think it was Haley Joel Osment, wasn't it?
Yeah. Like so the first time I saw this episode, like I see the credits, I'm like, Haley Joel Osment? Like, I figured he played the Tellarite captain, and then I had to look it up on Memory Alpha because I still couldn't peg his voice while I was watching a second time. But yeah, O'Connor as played by I See Dead People Joel Osment.
That's right. Yeah, when I saw the name, I was like, wait, what? Because yeah, you're right. Like, I'm so used to him as like, you know, a kid's voice in movies like obviously The Sixth Sense or AI. I've seen him in a few things here or there, like The X-Files, he popped up. He was in the Kevin Smith movie, I think Tusk. Yeah, I think it was Tusk.
He's also in Silicon Valley on HBO recently.
Okay. So yeah, but like as an adult, I haven't quite, you know, memorized his voice. So I had to kind of just through process of elimination watching the episode figure, yeah, I feel like it's probably that character because that character had the most dialogue in the episode and he was top billed. So I thought that kind of was initially how I put it together.
Yeah. What do you think of Mariner's bout as a senior officer, or at least somebody who's not a junior officer?
Well, here, I want to get back to, sorry, just to O'Connor, just one final thing, then I'll jump to the journey of Mariner. But I thought it was kind of interesting that when he did ascend and had his big horrific ascension, I thought that was kind of fun because in Star Trek, usually it's just like this divine light sort of idea or whatever. It's very like beautiful. And this was horrific. And they had a musical cue from like very similar to Raiders of the Lost Ark when Belloc is like opening the book or whatever and has the spirits come at him. I thought that was pretty funny. And he had a line actually that Cate Blanchett had as well in Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull with the "I see everything."
Well, like you said, steal from the best, right?
That's right. Kingdom of the Crystal Skull. There you have it, folks. But yeah, as for Mariner's journey, I mean, I thought like her ascension was actually really fun because in my mind,
Mariner had an ascension.
That's true. Yes, professionally. But when you pitch the idea of Lower Decks to me, what's funny is the characters who are the Lower Decks. And I was amused and impressed at how this episode mined comedy out of, you know, getting a promotion and actually being in a more reputable department or job title. And it was still funny. Like the show found ways to make that very, very funny.
Yeah, we were actually talking about it last week though. We're like, we're wondering about like spending more time with the senior crew. And let's be honest, man, if I'm in one of those conference rooms, I am yawning as well. The fact that Mariner held it in as well as she did at the start of it, good on her right there. But I do like the fact that as much as we kind of revere these main characters that we follow in all these Star Trek series, a lot of the job must be quite tedious. And like, what if you're not into poker and you're obligated to go to these boring games?
I love that, especially with like that. Once again, Dr. Tana like steals the scene, being the last one and like the long drawn out I fold. But I just thought that was so fun. I like the idea that these characters who, yeah, as you said, we look at the senior staff of most of the Star Trek shows as just awesome icons, and I love that they're really boring and they're, you know, just kind of milquetoast personalities, a lot of them. Or in the case of Ransom, they're just really douchey.
Yeah, like we're seeing the main characters from Next Generation at the most exciting 45 minutes of the week, like every week, every episode. I don't mind seeing the senior staff here at just their most, you know, boring, like at their most typical, you know, 24 minutes of the week. Like that's actually fun for me.
Yeah, like talking about what type of chairs to get for their meeting room. I thought that was pretty funny.
Someone's got to figure it out, right?
But also, like, just imagine a world where you have to attend these meetings. And yeah, you are right. Most of the time we're seeing the interesting meetings, you know, about an alien first contact or something. But imagine you've been up late or you haven't gotten a lot of sleep and you have to go to one of these meetings, one of these briefings, where it's a silent room, just the sound of the engines, and like Picard droning on about policy or something for like an hour. It would be brutal.
Yeah, especially if you have a guy, a Tellarite captain who loves dust and old gates. I love that line. That was a great line.
Yeah, the old gates joke made me laugh for sure. Because it's just that's the perfect type of kind of random line to throw in versus the pudding. Like, old gates is kind of weird, but very specific, whereas pudding feels very general.
Yes, no, I totally agree with you. So the storyline, I love the opening sequence. We get another just beautiful shot of the ship, and then we get to go into an alien ship, the Moist Vessel, so to speak, here. Just another beautiful image. It just shows what you can do with the animation versus what you can do with, like, the next generation era of budgets. You know, and we kind of set up like a kind of a typical, what I would call like a next gen sort of adventure where, like, we have to tow this ship to X point. Were you a little confused about what the ultimate mission was, though? It took until my second viewing until I figured out what was going on here.
Yeah, I was actually. So they're towing this generational ship. Where were they towing it to?
Well, okay, that's literally what I wrote in my notes. My notes say, let me pull it up here. I was like, I say, towing it where? ? It took until my second viewing, though, because then I realized that they had established that everybody in those cryogenic chambers are dead. They're all mummified. Yeah. So I originally thought they were taking them to a planet to let them terraform a planet for them to all live on. No, because there's another moment where, like, Captain Freeman is just like, yep, Starfleet Command's going to love me. And it's because they're acquiring this technology in which you can turn inorganic matter into organic matter and help with the terraforming process. She's going to get credit for at least helping out with this tow mission. So it's simply just kind of an acquisition of Starfleet right there, which is that the kind of mission that, I don't know, Picard and company would typically go on and like pat themselves on the back over?
That's basically just like a salvage mission.
Yeah, but it's also kind of like literal cultural appropriation.
It is as well that, but you are right. Yeah, that's not the type of mission Picard would be doing. Like, that's pretty below him.
Yeah. What I'm getting at, you know, what I've noticed over the last four episodes, is like, there are kind of significant plot points where, like, you and I have been, like, lost at moments. And it's like, I get the sense that, like, to keep the show fast-paced, they're cutting out some of the exposition that might seem a little tedious if you want to keep up the pace, but I still think it's kind of beneficial so that viewers know what's going on and aren't getting distracted getting up in their heads all the time.
Also, I noticed, you know, this episode opened, as so many Star Trek episodes do, with kind of like a captain's log. And when you watch TNG, when you watch the original series, any of the other, you know, various Star Trek shows, whoever's doing the captain's log is very good at enunciating, and they really have, you know, dramatic pauses and what have you. Like, they really lay out what's going on in the moment we're checking in with the crew. This one was like on fast forward because they like sped through all these details about this ship of mummies as well as the Tellarite captain, all this sort of stuff. And I was like, what? Like, I actually rewound to watch it over again the first time. I watched it twice, but the first time I rewound because I was like, wait, what did they say? Because they just sped through it so quickly in like 10 seconds or 15 seconds.
I'm forgetting the exact moment, but it was around the halfway mark. And I actually had to rewind for just a second because I got lost for a moment there. And it's actually, the pacing issue is actually something that's we've found to be in Discovery as well. And Picard to a lesser degree, but I think it's indicative of the Kurtzman era where it's like, just keep it moving. Plot point, plot point, plot point. Don't think about it. Just keep it moving. Keep it moving. And if you look at Star Trek in general, I think people like the slower pace to it, though. It's like the time to kind of be absorbed with what's going on around you in the environment, in the world building, and in the characters. And as much as I'm enjoying Lower Decks, I want them to take it down a couple notches.
Yeah, because I think you can do hyper fast-paced comedy without just like rushing through all of the setup. I mean, obviously with 24 minutes or 23 minutes or whatever they're working with, that gets a little tougher. But I believe it's possible to do, in that like you shouldn't just be rushing through all of your setup. But I do wonder, like, also setting up these, like, the premise of each episode, it's got to be a little tricky if they're like also want this to be appealing to people that aren't Star Trek fans. Because when you do an office comedy, whether it's The Office, for example, that show, you can kind of set up the basics of The Office in a way people understand very quickly. Whereas here, a lot of what they're talking about is kind of strange. And if you're not someone who watches Star Trek regularly, you just be like, wait, a what? Who's what? Like, it doesn't make sense. And so I'm...
Moriarty.
Sure, yeah, Moriarty, yeah, good example. But yeah, when you just like speed through a description of an event that, like, you know, you and I have watched, I don't even want to know how many hundreds of hours of Star Trek, you know, over and over again.
Thousands, so, you mean?
Exactly. But like, if I was like someone who was just checking out the show, would I know what they're talking about when they're setting up the mission? Like, would I be able to connect the dots in the way we can, having seen a billion captain's logs?
I just wonder if the creators are more worried about losing people if they take it slow, rather, and they're not thinking about like losing people because people kind of get lost in what's going on and they kind of disengage, no pun intended.
Sure. I mean, I think you could, as you said, say the same thing for Discovery. You know, obviously, that's not a comedy show. But again, it was we've got to rush through because we want people to think this is exciting and action-packed. Which, hey, I like action movies. I like fast-paced movies. But when it comes at the expense of story or setup, it's not great.
I felt the same way about Extraction starring Chris Hemsworth.
Sure.
I like that movie more than you did, though.
Yes, you did, yeah.
Yeah. One of the things I'm thinking about, though, if we keep kind of doing this comparison between the series, though, is the stakes. In both Picard and both seasons of Discovery, we find out what the stakes are. And every single season, it's the end of the universe as we know it. And that, to me, I don't care because I know how it's going to end. I know that they're going to save the universe. Otherwise, you don't have a series. And so I get frustrated with how they're trying to, you know, establish the stakes on those series. They haven't quite gone there yet with Lower Decks, but the thing is, if every single episode ends with like some sort of invasion on the ship, I'm just like, well, I guess I'll sit through this. They'll figure something out, and then we'll get, you know, kind of 2 minutes to cap off the episode. It almost seems as they've found like a formula for the series just 4 episodes in, which I don't think you necessarily want.
Yeah, I mean, I think you can really diversify the threats you would face in a Star Trek situation. I mean, go to any number of TNG episodes, the ship is not being invaded. It's not really being invaded very often on the show at all. Like, I think there's a lot of things you can mine from, whether it's, you know, a situation on an alien planet they have to deal with, or a probe in space, or it's just something, you know, even like, it kind of falls into the invasion thing, but when you had like the little ball of light floating around the ship, we're still waiting to find out what was that going on with that. But you know, you could have something fun working with that doesn't necessarily result in destruction. And I think they keep going to destruction. I think that's maybe the problem. Like, what if it was an alien species or alien intelligence that was making the crew do something wacky a la Naked Now / Naked Time? Like, that could be
fun. I was thinking about like how many times the Enterprise D has been invaded. It's only like 2 kind of things that stick out to me. I might be missing out on something else. One of which, Starship Mine. I don't necessarily think that translates into a Lower Decks episode. But the other time, it's Rascals, when the Ferengi legit take over the Enterprise D, and we have, you know, Guinan, Ro, and Picard, and Keiko. They're all in kitty form. I think that could be a total Lower Decks episode, especially if you integrate the Ferengi once more.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the only ones that jump to mind to me, too, is, I guess, Data taking over the Enterprise and Brothers pretty much single-handedly. And, I mean...
Is that an invasion, though?
It's not really. It's more the sense of just someone completely taking over the ship. But I was also thinking, I don't know, do we consider it an invasion when the Borg invade the Enterprise and, like, steal Picard?
No, like, because it's an in-and-out sort of deal. Because I think, remember in the episode Alliances, in which we had the doppelganger Picard walking around the ship? And then at the end, you have the aliens kind of reveal themselves. And that's not really an invasion, though. Like, and
no.
Q, I wouldn't consider Q invading the ship, you know? So it's
right.
Few and far between that the Enterprise D, I think, was legit invaded, though. But listeners, if we're missing some big ones, please let us know on Twitter or send us an email.
Yeah, like, it didn't happen as much as, like, on the original series where you had, like, the space hippies taking over, for example. I don't recall, like, many alien species coming on. Like, kind of like the alien species of the week showing up and taking over the Enterprise D.
Yeah, space hippies, they deserve to come back to Lower Decks, right?
I actually think a species like that could be really funny to bring on to Lower Decks. Like, I think we could have more fun if we're going to have threats. Because, like, again, kind of rockin' plants aren't really that wacky or fun or that memorable. But I think you could do something funny with an alien species. You know, we talked about that last week where, like, the crystal aliens, like, feel like a slight, you know, script pass away from being really funny. But I think that's kind of the right path where it's at least a little quirky.
Would they have to update the space hippies into, I don't know, space hipsters at this point?
Oh, that's a good question. Because I think it's funny on both levels. Like, if you went hipsters, that's funny. But if you made them still 1960s hippies singing, like, weird rock and roll music, that would be pretty funny as well. I don't think you can lose in this situation.
Would Captain Freeman have to challenge them to vocal jazz?
Oh, Tyler, this episode is writing itself.
Captain Ransom breaks out his acoustic guitar and belts out songs for hours that he wrote himself.
Oh, I am on board for this episode. Yeah. I was going to ask, though, speaking of Captain Freeman, what did you think of this as a character-building episode for her? We got some, like, quite a bit of Ransom stuff last week, and I had been saying we need to flesh out the senior staff more, and we got Ransom quite a bit last week, and we got Freeman this week.
I don't know what I think of her. Like, is this the first time she's ever commanded? Like, I just don't, like, does she have great leadership material on display at all times? Like, I don't know what they're trying to signal with this character other than, you know, Mariner, her daughter, just exasperates her week in, week out.
Yeah, well, it's like, we see the most of Captain Freeman when she's having scenes with her daughter, which is obviously like her Achilles heel, which tends to kind of make her look foolish or something like that. But like, we're not getting a lot of material of her, you know, functioning as a competent captain without the daughter in the picture.
Well, think about buffer time where she implemented that and it went bad and she didn't really know how to get out of it. And it actually took Boimler to help her figure that out. You talk about an Achilles heel. I definitely think she has a blind spot, and they actually pointed it out in like one of my other favorite scenes here, where it's actually Ransom that suggests that they assign Mariner all the worst jobs, because then the idea of transferring would be Mariner's idea, not Freeman's idea. And then right. We have Freeman say, "Yes, I should assign her the worst jobs because transferring would be her idea, not my idea." And then Ransom goes, "That's a brilliant idea. That's why you're the captain." Like, I like that sort of stuff. Like, and I think it reveals, look, these are flawed characters, you know. I just, like, I'd be happier to be under the command of, like, a Janeway or a Sisko or an Archer at this point than I would a Captain Freeman.
Yeah, I feel like they're making her character a little more arch, obviously, because it's a comedy. Could you do this show as a comedy with a captain like Picard who's right all the time? Would it work?
I think he's your straight man. He is your straight man every single time. I think that works really well. Let's say the Tellarite captain was your captain. You're like, "Oh, I've got to deal with this guy." Maybe you're intimidated all the time. Maybe he's not the guy doing vocal jazz, so you know he can't really let loose at any moment. Like, I think that would actually work better, like, comedy-wise.
Yeah, because the thing about Freeman is they keep making her look kind of inept in certain scenes. And then I kind of justify that in my head going, well, let's be honest, this isn't the greatest ship in the fleet, so maybe there's a reason that all of these senior staff are on this particular ship. Especially, I mean, it's not like you know, the first officer is any screaming hell either.
Only in the looks department.
That's right. Or he's like hitting on the security officer or something like that in that scene.
Yeah, that was a little weird, but I did like the line where he's like, "There's no peninsula more sensual than the Iberian." Like, that was a great line.
Yeah.
Because and it works, though, because they had already set up that he had spent a month living in Barcelona, as Freeman called it. So,
is, though, the joke ultimately that, like, In a Star Trek world where all of these senior staff are revered in all these shows, we cut to a ship like this where they occupy these revered titles, but they're kind of screw-ups. Like, maybe that's just the joke. I mean, and I think it works on that level. Like, I'm not criticizing the execution of that joke. It's just that it's, I think, a little different than what I expected going into the series.
And maybe you and I were just missing the whole point of the joke, in which, like, the joke is these aren't the greatest senior staff members, or at least they're flawed and they're learning just like the lower decks characters are too.
And maybe the division between them isn't as big as each character makes it out to be, each side. Yeah.
But is it problematic, though, if like how long has it been since a woman of color has been like the captain of our ship? We had like Giorgio in a significant role, but she was in two episodes. Yeah. We really like Cassidy Yates was a freighter captain. Is it a little tricky, a little problematic that like your first like really high profile woman of color as the captain, she's not all that competent in the job, or she has like very, very revealing flaws about her?
Yeah. I don't know. Or if it's just like, well, it's, I guess when you say the first one that is kind of the lead of a show, or at least the captain, an ongoing captain on a show, because Michelle Yeoh is only in a few episodes as a captain. Maybe we should have like a stronger example who is consistent throughout their series. But I also think it's, kind of everyone's looking like a goofball in this show. So it's, it's equal for every type of character on the show. So in that sense, I think that's a positive thing, but maybe the problem isn't so much Lower Decks. It's just like the franchise as a whole hasn't done a great job establishing maybe women of color as captains in various other facets of the franchise in recurring roles.
Cam, the only one that really pops out to me, though, as like a Starfleet captain is, was it the one featured in Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan?
Oh, yeah, okay, I know the one.
You know who I'm talking about?
Yeah,
but the thing is, like, we don't even recall her name, and we do a Star Trek podcast every single week, right?
Right, yeah.
So it's like, I don't know. We wish Star Trek with, 50-plus years of history, they should have a much better track record in this regard at this point.
Yeah, well, that's something that wasn't really dealt with well in, shows like, I mean, I guess Voyager, it was difficult because it's just like the one ship lost in the Delta Quadrant. But it's something that we should have seen more of, maybe even on Enterprise or something, just to kind of have some foundation there.
Oh, you know what? We do have Geordi's mom.
Yeah, that's true.
Although she did lose her ship, so I don't know if that's really making up for everything. So
plus, that episode is so boring that I don't know if anyone even remembers it. It kind of erases from your mind.
It's a pretty tedious, I think that one is Interface. I think that's the episode. It's pretty boring.
And correct me if I'm wrong, isn't the mom on that show an imposter?
Well, it's an alien that takes Geordi's mom's form, and it's because Geordi's mom lost the ship and everybody died.
Right.
So, yeah. Star Trek, you need to do better in this regard. That's all we're saying.
Yeah. Well, hopefully soon.
hopefully soon. Yeah. Look.
Yeah.
The show's got two seasons to work out some of the kinks. I'm sure Freeman. Look. What I'm getting at, though, I don't think these are supposed to be static characters. Like we get that a lot in like animated shows where like the characters that we meet are, that's who they are. From day one. Maybe not Homer Simpson so much, but how much has Peter Griffin grown as a character over 15 seasons? Like, well, exactly. I don't think that much. Yeah. Whereas I get the sense though that they want to have character growth on Star Trek Lower Decks. I think to them that's probably the point. I just don't think it's going to happen in leaps and bounds by episode 4 compared to episode 1. Like we're only a month into this series.
Oh yeah, totally. Like I'm not too concerned about, the end game of where the characters are going. I've really just enjoyed these little like micro growths episode to episode where, you just see more of the relationship between Boimler and Mariner just, you know, get kind of their antagonism, but also the friendship continues onwards. Like, that's the sort of thing I'm enjoying, which is what I enjoy on the other Star Trek shows as well. I don't need like drastic plot arcs, which I'm enjoying the complete absence of so far. And I'm more than happy to go along for the ride and just take it slow with the characters. I mean, the original series is my favorite of the Star Trek series, and it takes its time.
Yeah, that's for sure. Speaking of the original series, I think this, let's try to figure out the history of this joke, or why this joke, the one that comes at the very end, what, it's one of my favorite gags here, though. The Admiral calling them censors. Yes. Good on the censors. Is that a Nimoyism right there? Is that where it stems from? I've always called them censors.
It's quite possible. Like, it wouldn't surprise me, because, I mean, I think this crew is really mining the depths of Star Trek quite a bit. So it's quite possible. I remember there was a lot of theories that the sabotage use in the Kelvinverse movies was related to Shatner's mispronunciation of the word sabotage on the original series. And I think they kind of shot that down. But I want to, you know, I have more faith in Lower Decks in that being the case, that the censor thing is an inside joke.
Well, it's like, you got the joke, though, because, like, we've heard, like, many a character call them censors in the past, even though I think the vast majority of characters in Star Trek call them censors. Like, well, why is it so prevalent that people would call them censors?
I have no idea. I mean, I feel like in a lot of, like, older TV shows, they didn't have, like, dialogue coaches on set or anything, where it was just like people just pronounce names differently. Terms like, as you said, censor, different actors would pronounce them differently, and no one was on set being like, oh, actually, it's actually pronounced this way.
Like, my theory, and I think it's pretty basic though, but it's just like somebody was just reading it, like, they maybe it's not a word that they had really heard that much in day-to-day language, which I can understand. I mostly just hear it by listening to Star Trek shows. But I think, like, somebody just read it on the page and saw the hard O-R there, and they just went for it. Nimoy's like, censor, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, I mean, how often was the word censor really said in, like, 1966?
I don't think that much, you know. Like, how often do you use censor in, like, day-to-day, like, language? Like, just having conversations with people.
Am I talking to you?
alleviate yourself of that pain. You're not talking to me, just you're at work. How often do you use the word censor?
Like, never. Yeah. I don't know that I've said it outside of a Star Trek podcast, really.
I have it on there's like a microwave setting I've got, I think, that has, I don't know, is it popcorn censor or something? I don't know. But yeah. So one thing that I realized after I got to the end of this one, Cam. So we are at the same mark, just terms of minutes, after four episodes, that we would be after a typical series premiere, you know, an encounter at far point, emissary, a caretaker, a broken bow. How do you feel about the show, you know, kind of after, 90 minutes total or so, versus, you know, the 90 minutes total of so that we would get from TNG after the series premiere, for example.
Well, I don't know that this establishes the series anywhere near as well as a counter at Farpoint. I kid, of course. I actually think, like, these first four episodes of Lower Decks have done a fantastic job in establishing what the series is. And, like, when I tune in tonight to watch an episode, you know, the latest episode of Lower Decks, I know the energy I'm going to be getting, and I'm not scratching my head basically the entire episode thinking, like, okay, what am I going to say on the podcast about where this show's even, like, seems to be going, the way I was with, like, Picard, for example, by episode four. You know, we were at absolute candor at this point in Picard. You know, obviously, you're saying...
we were talking about censors. Now you're saying candor.
I did.
Absolute candor.
Yes, candor.
Absolute candor. Yeah.
Yeah, but in terms of episodes, not hours, we were at absolute candor. And I still didn't know what that show is. Whereas, like, this one, I know what show I'm getting. And it has a certain, like, comfort food element to me. I know a lot of people aren't really digging the vibe of this show. But to me, it is like a comfort food show. Like, I'm tuning in, I'm enjoying the characters, And yeah, we can quibble about plotting and what have you, but in terms of the energy, in terms of the characters, and in terms of the comedy when they nail it, I think the show's doing a really fantastic job.
It's interesting that you kind of spell it out that way, especially like just in terms of minutes that we've watched, like it feels as if they know what the show wants to be. I think they're learning as they go, and the show's only going to get better as they figure out what works and what doesn't work. But it feels like they know what show that they're making, which we got to the end of Picard season one. And it is such a messy sort of conclusion that you still don't get the sense that they even know what they want that show to be. Like, I guess season two will be a ragtag crew aboard La Serena, but what's ultimately the point of these adventures? Where I think we already know what the point, the raison d'etre is of Lower Decks right now.
Totally. And I mean, I would honestly not be shocked if season two Picard goes in a drastically different direction. Whereas I feel like Lower Decks, I kind of know what I'm in for the long haul.
Do you hope Picard goes in a drastically different direction?
Yes, I think so.
Yeah, so do I.
Yeah. I can't take like another whole season about androids.
And mystery boxes, you know, capping off every single episode.
Yeah, no thanks.
But, you know, it also took Discovery, like, honestly, like, we've been building up season three a lot in our heads, though, but I think the reason we're excited is because we kind of, the show has figured out what it wants to be moving forward. I think that's what's kind of gripping about the prospect of the upcoming season in October as well.
I remember being at a restaurant with you, probably, I'm going to say 4 episodes, maybe 5 into season 2 Discovery. And I remember just saying to you, like, I don't know that this show is very good or even knows what it's doing anymore. And ultimately, when we got to the end of season 2, I was fully on board. Like, the show had really grabbed me. I think the transition with showrunners helped a lot. The plots became more focused. The characters became more focused. And I was 100% excited for season 3 Discovery. But you are right. It did take a while.
I'm just thinking about the beginning of the Red Angel stuff, where they keep screaming, it's the Red Angel. We have to find the Red Angel. Let's track the Red Angel. And they never once established why it was important. Like, that is just absolutely bizarre. It's like the writers had it in their head why it was important, but they never, ever spelled it out to the viewers in those early goings, which is just so, so weird. And like, frankly, it's bad writing, or if it was edited out, well, then it's bad editing for whatever reason.
Yeah, and it just felt like, it felt like they had some basic ideas that they were just kind of throwing together, because when you get later into that season, it feels like it really solidifies into a story they're telling, and I don't know that they knew what that story was when they were writing episode 1.
I don't think they did.
Yeah, so Lower Decks is on the right track, or the right trek, you could say.
Wow. Okay. Look at it, and like I'm excited about what we're gonna get from the last half of this season. I think this is my favorite episode so far, because I think they're kind of finding the right balance moving forward. I could use with like more of a slower pace for Lower Decks, but just give me more. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, I would agree. This was the best episode so far. I still think maybe episode 1 had like one or two of the funniest moments of the series so far. But in terms of consistency, I think this episode was the best for sure.
Yeah.
I am curious though, like when we get another episode that is maybe a little more, because obviously they've had references peppered throughout, you know, Moriarty and what have you throughout this episode, a bunch of things, but the Traveler. But I'm wondering when we get an episode that actually deals with some Star Trek mythology a little more. I'm looking forward to that.
I'm wondering, like, if, well, you know, we kind of touched on it last week, but like stuff like, you know, whatever came of the Cardassians after the Dominion War, like that's the kind of stuff I'm like, they can have fun at the periphery of this universe. They don't have to delve into like these ongoing story arcs or anything like that.
Yeah, or just go to like a recognizable planet like Vulcan or something like that. I think that could be really fun.
Yeah.
So, okay. I think on that note, our assignment is complete. If you enjoyed listening to this podcast, we want to hear from you. Jump on over to the Facebook page at facebook.com/subspacepod. Tyler, what are we doing next week?
As of tonight, as we record Thursday evening, August 27th, there's no name for episode 5, but despite not having a name that we know, we're still going to review the episode, Cam.
Awesome. Well, I look forward to it. And it'll be
good news for all you listeners.
It'll be interesting, too, to mark the halfway point through season one as well.
Because that would have put us at Stardust City Reg in Star Trek Picard.
My God.
Brutal.
Remember that sad Brutal. Conversation?
That's where I just remember we stopped recording, or we hit the record button. We looked into each other's eyes. That's when we, pre-pandemic, and we just kind of shook our heads and were like, what is going on? What is this show?
And as I recall, we were supposed to have a guest on that episode, and the guest had to cancel. And in some ways, maybe that was for the better, because it was just like the two of us just like, oh God, like what's going on? What has happened?
I think it would have been like the most unfortunate guest booking since we had our Dale DeRuyter on Saints of Imperfection from season two of Discovery.
Sorry, Dale. We really apologize for that one.
Yeah. Well, there's another kind of alien invasion, and like you have kind of that cloud or mushroom version of Discovery being invaded by some sort of spores, I guess.
yeah, that's true.
I'm not going to try to justify that episode. It sucked.
It did, full on. Okay, you can, of course, find us on the Twitter. I'm at Cam. V is in voice of Haley Joel Osment Smith.
Oh, you didn't go with vocal jazz. I thought that's...
Oh, I didn't even think of that.
And you can find me at Reportin. That's R-E-P-O-R-T. T is in Turbo Lift Lubing, O-N.
Okay, so until next time, the arena is closed.
Transfer complete.